Welcome to Crime Analysis from Between the Tropics, the Africa series from ASIA, the Association of Crime and Intelligence Analysts, bringing you the crime analysis perspective from the African continent.
Crime intelligence, criminal intelligence analysis, and analytical products have great potential for improving the quality of criminal investigations and professional standards in countries where financing and expertise might be at a premium. Some of these countries are found in Africa. In this podcast, we're going to explore situations where criminal intelligence has been the better choice than traditional sleuthing, and we shall ask ourselves, what aspect of criminal intelligence should be better promoted in the African setting, and how can this best be done? Welcome. Hi all. It's good to be here with you all. Thank you for supporting me in making this podcast. It would be strange speaking to myself all alone in an empty room. Firstly, for the many who don't know me, I'm Emmanuel James Teng, a lawyer, criminal intelligence analyst, and now podcast presenter with the Association of Crime and Intelligence Analysts, or ACIA in short. ACIA ordinarily focuses on the UK analytical fold, but in this new series of podcasts, we're going to spread our wings wider and see what analysis is, can, or could do in Africa. ACIA is a community of crime and intelligence analysts from across the United Kingdom and Ireland, connecting together to develop analytical skills through interaction and exchange of ideas and knowledge, supporting each other as a community of practitioners. This series of podcasts are made possible with the kind assistance of Paige Kenningale of the University of Surrey. African crime is on the rise and getting more sophisticated and brutal as populations rise and transnational crime spreads. This brings never-before-contemplated crimes to the continent. Whilst faced with this challenge and tasked by local politicians and international forces alike, African law enforcement, in all but a few cases, operate with precious little funding and are limited in the ability to tackle these issues alone. On certain occasions, discarding the traditional method of policing to adopt an innovation can make all the difference. Good examples of this in the United Kingdom are Operation Belmont, involving undercover police setting up and running a fake second-hand goods store to net burglars and handlers of stolen goods, and Operation Chariot, involving police leaving high-end GPS trackable electronic goodies like laptops in vulnerable cars in crime hotspots, hoping they can be stolen, tracked and recovered with inevitable arrests. The Ugandan equivalent of such operations exist. An example can be given of Ugandan police telephoning a suspect wanted for questioning in one matter and telling them a complaint has been raised about them in another. The complaint the suspect is informed of is usually milder and more trivial than what they might have done, something social or domestic, but sufficiently annoying to make that suspect attend the police station. Once at the station, the police then proceed with the real inquiry. Such tactics are examples of African law enforcement innovating and thinking outside the box to close law enforcement gaps. In the pursuit for operational success, which are the countries providing a helping hand? Is the United Kingdom amongst them? Does criminal intelligence analysis feature in this help? And if it does, how is it improving life for the local population? To answer these questions, like any good analyst, I had to dig around. ACIA is a community of crime and intelligence analysts from across the UK and Ireland, connecting together to develop analytical skills through interaction and exchange of ideas and knowledge, supporting each other as a community of practitioners. This series of podcasts are made possible with the kind assistance of Paige Kenningale of the University of Surrey and Dr. Susan Narber-Nicol of PoliceScienceDoctor.com. In order to begin to answer the questions posed, we brainstormed the sources most likely to have authoritative answers for us. We settled on the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, or UNODC in short, the British High Commission, and the Uganda Police Force. Taking Uganda, East Africa as a sample, we took a cursory look at the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crimes website. Maybe it could tell us who supported Ugandan law enforcement with its mission and what those support programs were. The UNODC website stated, "The UNODC Regional Office for Eastern Africa was established in 1988 in Nairobi, Kenya, and currently covers 13 countries, namely Burundi, Comoros, Djibouti, Eritrea, Ethiopia, Kenya, Madagascar, Mauritius, Rwanda, Seychelles, Somalia, Tanzania, and Uganda. UNODC, as the guardian of crime prevention and criminal justice standards and norms, the UN Convention Against Transnational Organized Crime, UNTOC, and its related protocols, the UN Convention Against Corruption, UNCAC, as well as the various international instruments in drug control and counterterrorism, has unique expertise in addressing illicit trafficking and organized crime, as well as the linkages to corruption and terrorism. Through its regional office in Eastern Africa, UNODC has developed extensive knowledge of the drug and crime situations in the region and has strong cooperation lines with relevant national authorities and partner organizations. So, that statement would make UNDOC one of the supporters of Ugandan law enforcement then. Now, we turn to the British High Commission, or at least we were going to. Britain has been in a protected relationship with what came to be Uganda since 1894. Right from the Uganda Rifles in 1890 to the formation of the Ugandan Armed Constabulary in 1899 and subsequently, the United Kingdom has been intimately involved in law, order and security in this nation. As a colonial power, a lot of institutions in Uganda retain a British accent, policing and crime control inclusive. Within these sectors, a lot of British practices still exist, echoes of bygone era. However, when researching our question, which was going to be, is the United Kingdom amongst the countries that support law enforcement in Uganda, and how? We came across this useful exchange between Dr. Paul Williams, Labour MP for Stockton South, who had asked which Ugandan units the UK government provided support to. The response provided was that Her Majesty's government has provided military support to the Ugandan People's Defence Forces, UPDF, during 2017 to 2019, and to the Ugandan Wildlife Authority and the Ugandan Police Force in 2017 and 2018. Support to the Wildlife Authority and Police was in countering the illegal wildlife trade, and the police also received training in improvised explosive devices. So, Britain did support Ugandan law enforcement, including the police, but only to the extent of training in countering the illegal wildlife trade and improvised explosive devices. What was the extent of this or previous training? To ascertain this, we consulted the Ugandan police force. Speaking on condition of anonymity, because he has not been authorized to undertake media activities, a criminal intelligence professional we shall call Andrew provided some insight as to what support Britain provided in countering the illegal wildlife trade. According to Andrew, Uganda has received assistance with criminal intelligence training in general, criminal intelligence analysis in particular, and wildlife crime scene investigation techniques. Uganda Wildlife Authority, being an executive agency of the government of Uganda, charged with enforcing wildlife protection laws, finds itself not only dealing with poachers and smugglers, but increasingly its remit extends beyond the boundaries of Uganda's national parks. Nowadays, proceeds of crime travel through and are laundered in cyberspace. Is Uganda or Africa ready for this? At the beginning of this podcast, and now at the end, we've asked ourselves some questions. What aspect of criminal intelligence are best introduced into the African setting? Well, in the course of researching the podcast, it seems clear that excellence in the analytical function is the aspect of criminal intelligence best introduced into the African setting. How can this best be done? This can best be done by providing network and linkage opportunities for Ugandan analysts and African criminal intelligence analysts to allow great exchange of ideas and best practice from all parties. Which are the countries that are lending a helping hand? The contributors lending a helping hand in shaping criminal intelligence analysis are, largely, the member states of the Lusaka Agreement Task Force and the Intergovernmental Authority on Development. Is the United Kingdom amongst them? The United Kingdom has been one of the countries shaping criminal intelligence analysis in Uganda, but not since 2019, in relation to the Uganda Police Force. There is scope, though, through ACIA for the United Kingdom to exercise a pivotal role in promoting excellence and best practice in the analytical discipline, albeit in an informal peer-to-peer fashion. This podcast might even be considered the first step in that direction. Does criminal intelligence analysis feature in this help? As just stated, it could. In what setting in Africa is criminal intelligence analysis used? From the research undertaken and in reference to our sample Uganda, criminal intelligence analysis in Uganda is available for police operations and is certainly evident in operations countering the illegal wildlife trade. From personal experience, I'm aware it's also available in the correctional setting and in other law enforcement entities, such as the Uganda Revenue Authority, although it should also rightly be found in the Directorate of Citizenship and Immigration Control, the Financial Intelligence Authority, the National Drug Authority, the Uganda National Examinations Board, the Bank of Uganda, the Capital Markets Authority, the Uganda Registration Services Bureau, the Uganda Bureau of Standards, and a host of private entities susceptible to fraud, sabotage, or other illegal actions against their operations. Other African countries with similar institutions might also benefit from criminal intelligence analysis. What has criminal intelligence analysis managed to achieve in Africa so far? If nothing else, criminal intelligence analysis has managed to highlight and document in a systematic way instances of poaching in Africa. Because criminal intelligence analysis, premised on highlighting information gaps and trying to fill them, is largely inductive in its reasoning, it differs from traditional criminal investigation or detective work, which is deductive in its reasoning. The criminal intelligence analyst receives evidence, makes their observation and measures from this, formulates broad generalizations and theories from these observations and measures, notes and evidences patterns and irregularities, forms and explores the hypotheses, and then reaches the conclusion either proving or disproving their hypotheses. The police officer, criminal investigator or detective, does the opposite. They start off with a theory, they then form hypotheses, look for evidence, and then seek confirmation. Because criminal intelligence analysis follows the evidence, it is less susceptible to suggestion of theories to follow that beset criminal investigations marred by political interference, no-go areas, and untouchables. There is an exchange between a corporal and a general in a film, Night of the Generals, that best illustrates what goes on in some countries. In that exchange, the general is heard to ask or to state to the corporal, "Today I asked you, who's more important, a general or a corporal?" And you answered, "General." The corporal responds, "Of course, I agreed with you." The general then continues, "But when the general should be hanged for a filthy, bloody murder," and the corporal concluded, "then the corporal must hang in his place." And so sometimes this is how it goes in some places. But criminal intelligence analysis follows the evidence, not the theory. It is better inured against such things than plain detective inquiry. How is criminal intelligence analysis improving life for the local populace in Africa? Corruption and impunity abound in Africa. In their 2020 report, the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, UNCTAD, assessed that illicit financial flows robbed Africa of $80 billion annually. That is money that could provide serious development and improved quality of life for millions of Africans. If criminal intelligence analysis can lessen compromise in criminal investigations by following the evidence to its logical destination without fear or favour, then this is what it can do for Africans: help bring more guilty parties to book and recover laundered funds. Criminal intelligence analysis could be better used to collate and sum up evidence of illicit financial flows, map out the origin and final destination of such flows and all intervening points between, and present that evidence in an eminently understandable, relevant, compelling, and admissible form for use in recovery of illegally appropriated funds. It could also be put to use by non-governmental organizations in the human rights sphere for identification of, documentation, and tracking of human rights abuse, making prosecution for the same more of a certainty than an ideal. This has been a podcast hosted by me, Emmanuel James Ateng, on behalf of the Association of Crime and Intelligence Analysts, on the discipline of criminal intelligence analysis in Africa and its utility in maintaining the integrity of criminal investigations. We hope that the podcast has been engaging and informative. I thank all you guys in the audience. You've been great. Tea and biscuits are now available. We look forward to bringing other podcasts in this series shortly. Until then, thank you, one. Thank you all.